I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Kyle Schwartz. He is with Rice's Talent Partners. Kyle is a Eagle Scout that went to the Naval Academy, except that almost didn't happen. We got a story there. Apparently, somebody did not want him in the Naval Academy. But he went, became a United States Naval Surface Warfare Officer. He brings 17 years of leadership experience with over 10 years in the area of recruiting. I got to know Kyle through a networking group that we're both in. We're actually starting a chapter together called Success Champions Networking. This isn't a plug, but that's how I got to know Kyle. And he's a heck of a guy. And so I asked him to come on Leaders and Legacies to share some of his insights. Kyle, welcome.
Hey, Craig, I appreciate it. Kind of coming right out of the gate shooting there with that one. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. I don't think I got very much of the story, but you almost didn't get, you wanted to go to the academy, but somebody said no?
to put it bluntly. So for those that probably don't know, there's obviously a very challenging application process. And one of the tickets to ride is to talk with what the Naval Academy calls a blue and gold officer. Every service academy has someone within a specified region of the country that it's their job to go out and talk to prospective candidates for the various academies. I myself am starting this academic year as a blue and gold officer for the Richmond, Sugar Land, Texas area just outside of Houston. And the reason for that is because I want to have the same impact that my blue and gold officer had on me. When I first met him, I had all the academic side of it. I had the prerequisites in terms of things I was doing outside, extracurricular. I played varsity soccer, but when you looked at me, I wasn't the ideal specimen. If you have that idea of a midshipman in your head of what you expect a midshipman to look like, that wasn't me. And so my blue and gold officer, and I won't name him, I love him to death because he and I are very good friends now, but he walked in and just immediately goes, "You're not a fit," and wow, walked out. The interview lasted 15 minutes.
Wow.
And so we talked it through, and I immediately knew what the reason was. He gave me the feedback. So I went and got a subscription to Bally's. This is up in the Chicagoland area where I grew up. And for the next 6 weeks, I dedicated to strength training and cardio training. Came back, took the actual physical assessment. He walked in flat out saying, this is the best nomination I've given to the Naval Academy in 7 years.
Wow.
So yeah, it was good. But that impact highlighted a few things. One, I don't quit when it comes to getting what I'm looking to do and what I think is for my best and for those around me, for their best. And two, just for the impact that he had on it to make it into a positive like this. Like there's, I think everyone feels that when you are highlighting a partnership that it's only good things, but some of the best relationships are born out of a negative occurrence that is then molded into a positive one. And like I said, he and I have been friends now for a couple decades at this point.
Yeah, no, and that's awesome. Well, and you know, and there was actually a lot of value added to you by him just being so candid.
Absolutely.
Changed your life.
Yep, absolutely. And I've got other examples similar to that space, but that one stands out. And I think it's because of the most recent connections with becoming a blue and gold officer myself.
You know, I know somebody in a leadership position. I'm not going to say too much because I want folks to drill in, but he hates confrontation. And so he'll never have the difficult conversations. And he's in the process of losing one of his employees because he won't have the difficult conversations.
Hmm. So he's in a leadership role, but would you, I, at that point, that qualifies. I know there's different definitions of each, but that qualifies as more of a manager role than it is a leader role.
I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah, and it's a relatable quote. I know probably most of the people listening to this are familiar with Simon Sinek. His impact, of course, in the training of the corporate world, the understanding of empathy within your employees and your culture. One of his best quotes that sticks with me to this day is, credibility is not, and so in this case, I'll equate it as credibility as a leader is not given by asking for, or excuse me, by offering help. It's given by asking for help. And to me, this sounds like a manager who has not made that cross into being able to ask for help to have that hard conversation.
Yeah, no, exactly. And he's a great guy. I know him. I think he's a wonderful guy. But he's failing as a leader because he's not getting the help he needs in his life.
And being nice, being friendly, those are great prerequisites and obviously go a long way towards empathy, but that doesn't predetermine quality leadership styles.
So I'm curious, what would you say that going into the academy, what did the academy teach you about leadership?
So I think that's another kind of common misnomer. The Naval Academy certainly has its process and it's been doing it for almost 200 years. But to become a leader, you can't just teach that. That's something that someone has to embody and want to be and take on board feedback, be willing to have the mature conversations. So the Naval Academy is certainly one fantastic pathway to get exposure, to learn that about yourself and become that. But that, again, is not a ticket to ride that you automatically graduate as a leader of people. You
Right.
have to want to. You have to want to develop and understand and get to know people. And that comes no matter what school you go to. It could be a technical college down the street. It could be the gentleman or the person who doesn't go to college at all, who has inherent and intrinsic leadership skills because that's what they want to be and embody those values. Just because I have a degree from the Naval Academy doesn't automatically qualify me as a leader over someone else.
And I think the audience knows I was in the Marines, and when I was deployed to the Philippines, we had this supply officer who was just, he was a mess. And I think it was a staff sergeant or gunny, just looked him in the eye one day and said, "Sir, you are no officer of Marines." And he got all upset. He went to the sergeant major and was like, "Hey, this staff sergeant told me I'm no officer of Marines." And the sergeant major said, "He's right. You better square yourself away."
You gotta love the senior enlisted. You really do. You gotta love the senior enlisted. They are not afraid to tell it like it is. There are stories of the highest levels of those folks being invited to stay behind to talk with the 3 and 4 star admirals in the Pentagons and being listened to. Like there are some good quality people in those roles.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of an example of what you were talking about. He had the brass on his shoulders, but he wasn't a leader. The brass didn't make him a leader.
Nope. You respect the uniform because of the authority it represents, but that doesn't necessarily respect the style or the person.
Yeah. Now, I have an obvious question. So you go to the Naval Academy. Why in the world didn't you choose the Marine option?
Well, I mean, if you're defining Marine as ocean going, I did. Truth be told, it didn't last long, but there was a point where Marine Corps was an option I was looking into. Fortunately, the Naval Academy has a program that they train and send all of their, let me back that up a little bit. When you go to the Naval Academy, you don't commit to the 5 years of service until the start of your junior year. So you could do the first 2 years and then leave the Naval Academy and not owe anything back in terms of service or monetary value for your education. But the moment you sign the papers as a junior, as a second class, they call it, you now are committed to the next 2 years of education for the next 5 years of service after that. The reason I bring that up is that summer before you do that, the Naval Academy has a program called ProTRMID, where they have you go out and do a tour on a surface ship, tour on a submarine, tour with a Marine Corps unit in Leg or excuse me, in Quantico, and a tour with an aviation group, usually in either Norfolk or San Diego. And so they give you a good week to 2 weeks per training to get a feel for what it's going to be like a day in the life. I did a couple days of ProTrimid at Quantico. I respect the heck out of those people. That was not my life.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that was, I mean, I always knew that there was, you could choose the marine option. I didn't know how that went about.
Yep, the Academy calls it ProTrimid, and then I believe most of the reserve groups are like, if you're affiliated with a reservist training unit out of, say, like Notre Dame or those other schools, I think they call it Cortramid. So it's they're the same type of thing.
Very cool. Well, let's pivot a little bit and talk about talent acquisition, recruiting.
Yep.
So, how did you get into that?
You know, it's funny, you get out of the Navy. Well, first, I graduated the Academy with, of all things, an ocean engineering degree. Obviously, I haven't used that a day in my corporate life at this point, but I graduated with that. I did my 5 years as a surface warfare officer, as you kindly alluded to. And you think when you get out of that, you're going to be an operations manager, a leader of people. Like you're going to step into a role where people are going to, you're going to be responsible for folks underneath you. I got matched with a company at the time called Orion International, now known as Orion Talent, and they specialize in placing transitioning military veterans, be it former enlisted as well as junior officers, into the corporate American world. And I went as a candidate for one of our conferences out of Virginia Beach. That was where my career in the Navy ended, was in Norfolk. And I got out, got matched up, and they had an opportunity for an account executive role within Orion itself, which is a much more sales problem-solving role where you're doing business to business. I'm a very competitive guy, and I knew immediately when I heard what that job required and that it was one of those kind of, you're solving problems, but it's also you're an independent contributor. Like you're there to win in some capacity, and winning can be defined by a number of metrics, but it's that competitive market that I want to solve this problem, solve it the right way as quickly as I can for my prospective clients. Come to find out, I reflect back on it. My dad was a commercial insurance salesman in Chicago for 23 years. My grandfather sold payroll while also being a reservist in the Navy. So sales has been something I have been used to for a long time. And I grew up constantly hearing my dad with his relationship sales always be conversational to where he knew about their families, they knew about him, and that was the relationship and the partnership that I wanted to embody immediately.
Which surprises me a little bit when I think about, the recruiters that I've worked with. It's kind of come in, get the job done, and go out. Now, there were a couple of recruiters. I actually have one that invited me to come stay at his lake house, and I did. I was traveling back east, and he's like, "Oh, you're going to be coming by, stay in my house. We'll go out on the lake." And but he was doing that because he was hoping to place me in the future and get a bonus. But a lot of the recruiters, it's just been more about the business.
And that's, I hate to say that that is probably more common than it really should be, especially in the people business. Like this is, companies and employers and future leaders in those companies should not be fearful or afraid of the partnership they're creating to find their future teammate. What kind of a culture is that inspiring? You know, if all we're being viewed at is a tax collector, that's not a partnership, that's a vendor. And I know that it probably cost me commissions, sure, to view it that way. And I won't lie, I am not perfect. I know that there were plenty, especially early on, that I had made placements and matches that I shouldn't have. They were not right for the candidate, they weren't right for the client. But you're early on, you don't learn that until later. It only becomes at a point where, not even if you're comfortable financially, you just know this is what is right because the relationship that I'm forging now is one that I'm going to maintain and look to grow and ideally have down the road and just be connected with. And I take great pride in that because even with this new role, I've only been at Rice's since the end of April.
Okay.
And I have a lot of people from my time at Orion and beyond that I am still talking to and engage with. I still ask about their kids. There's a gentleman in Chicago who's a West Point grad. I don't fault him for it. He just happens to be. And he's got kids that are in that just graduated med school. He's got one that's in the Junior National Hockey League. Like he's, and then we ask about that. We talk about that. We spend 28 minutes of a 30-minute call talking about family. And I take great pride in that because it means it was the right connection, the right match, even if we weren't the right solution at the time for what he needed.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's Something I talk about a lot in my business is, I'm a marketer, and most marketers are doing transactional marketing. They're trying to get something. The idea is, hey, I'm going to make an offer and hopefully get the quick win. And the thing that people miss about that is transactional clients are the least profitable and they're the least sticky.
Exactly.
And all it takes is a better transaction to yank them away.
There's a book I was recently introduced to that I had never heard of before. It's called Leadership and Self-Deception. And it talks about being in the box and putting others in a box. And when you get to the corporate business like this, especially B2B sales, like you really do look at it as your metrics are what drive the conversation. And then that also means you're now viewing the person on the other end of that phone or that email, whatever, who it is you're talking to, be it the business person or the candidate, as a metric to drive your success. You're not seeing them as the whole person that they are, which if you're not seeing them as the whole person that they are, you can't then step up and have that human connection with them.
Well, and back when I was working for someone else, and we'd use recruiters every now and then, the ones I liked the best was I didn't want 20 resumes. I wanted three. And it was people that knew me, knew what I was looking for enough that they'd send me the right resumes.
There's a lot of pieces that go into the quality over quantity piece, and that starts right from the get-go of not being afraid to be upfront and ask those questions and say, and really get a vibe for how does this make you feel? Not just what are you looking for in a candidate? Like, what is the expectation of this person that's going to join your team? What should they be looking out to and looking out for to potentially join your team? And being that person that can say, you know, we're not the right fit. We're not the right fit. We're not the right solution for you. And at that point, now you've made it and shown the personal investment, not just the potential monetary or financial one.
Well, and I think it's the long-term view. I mean, I would imagine when you're placing somebody, you're not looking at it as you're placing one person. You're placing that person plus the next five placements.
No, exactly. I mean, to put that kind of fine of a point on it, yes, we're looking at this as that long-term partnership. So we'll do the one role because we want to make sure we get a feel for you and what you're doing, and then you get a feel for our process. But we don't go into it thinking, okay, that's it. See you, fire and forget and move on. We want this to be something that if we're going to get in business with you and develop that relationship, we want it to be, as you said, long-term. We want to be the solutions provider you can turn to.
So here's a question. I mean, inevitably in business, you're going to run into a client where you realize, okay, this is just, I can't in good conscience place people in this organization. You're going to run into candidates that you're like, not only can I not place you here, but I don't want to place you anywhere. How do you deal with those situations?
So I would say the client one is probably the easiest one, at least for me. And in the role I'm in, I deal primarily with the clients at this point. We have an entire good team at Rysis that is focused on the fulfillment and the candidate engagement. I'm really looking to get the partnership with the corporate entities at this point. But in my past roles at Orion or anywhere else that I've been a part of, you just basically have to say, here's the challenge we're seeing, and this is what we need to talk about. And if they're willing to come to the table and talk about it, then you've repaired that. I have several examples in my past of having that conversation. We fixed it. They took a great effort to get there and realized, you're right, this isn't the right way to do it. And we still talk and we're still friends today. Others can't take that feedback on board. And I imagine your friend that you mentioned earlier is probably one of those that doesn't want to have that hard conversation, and it's just time to go find something else. And if they were looking at a recruiting firm. With the candidates, I don't. That one I was probably brutally honest with. I'll be very frank with that one. I will take that on board. I probably just flat out said, you can't do this. This is not the right way to do it. And unless you have any, unless if you have no interest in changing, we're done. And that would end ties. But that's
Yeah.
probably not the right way to have done it either.
There was one time there was a recruiter I was working with, and I think it was, I don't think I'd done much work with them, but they sent me some resumes, and I'll say that they did a good job of narrowing them down. And I did a phone interview with somebody, and decided to pass. And then I got like the most angry email ever from this guy. At which point I printed it out. I wrote the name of the recruiter on that and I took it to our HR and said, "Hey, just so you know, this recruiter sent us this angry person."
Yes. Anyone can pretend to be just about anything for 45 minutes. You know, it only takes time and real involvement to get to see the true colors. And I would argue that in that case, that recruiter probably just saw the technical fit and didn't dive into the subjective questions, the cultural fit, or else that would have been a flag and a challenge identified right out of the gate.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't realize it immediately, but at that company, the recruiters that we worked with, I found out that after the interview, they would ask them, "Hey, how'd your interview go with Craig?" I apparently developed a reputation for having the tougher questions. But there was, for me, I was always looking for questions. I would always test on fundamentals. And that was kind of the culture of the company we had. People who are good at fundamentals can figure out the complicated stuff. If you don't know the fundamentals, you'll never be able to do much.
No doubt. And there are certainly technical jobs out there where the only requirements are being able to hit the technical specs on your resume. But in most cases, especially with the higher level roles, the ones that are going to be responsible for not just people within a company, but helping to drive that company's vision, that company's culture forward, you have to ask the subjective questions. The resume is your ticket to ride. At this point, if I send you a resume, we've already qualified them for the job specs, but that also means we had to qualify them for the cultural ones and the subjective ones. And there's a lot more invested in that. And so if companies are not willing to look into that, that's going to provide challenges to the one you just described.
I got a question for you. I have a buddy who is, amazing. He's absolutely amazing, super talented. He made me very successful because of his talents. And he went off and got argumentative on LinkedIn and ended up getting himself banned from LinkedIn. It feels like if you're not on LinkedIn, it's hard to get a job.
It's certainly, I would say for certain roles and up, absolutely. It is a platform that if you are banned, and I don't know what was said or how, I know that getting banned on platforms like that isn't the easiest thing to do, so I don't even want to know what it was that sparked that. But no, it does seem like LinkedIn is really a great tool to get out there because I'm in a recruiting firm. I'd love to tell you that recruiting firms place 90% of the people in the world. We don't. We help, we guide, we make connections, and LinkedIn is a great place to help those connections flourish and become important, especially the longer you're in corporate America or in the corporate sector. That said, it is not a black spot end all be all. There's another reason recruiting firms are here, because we have those connections. So I would say it will take a little bit to check the boxes and maybe even a little bit higher bar cultural fit wise than what we would normally ask. But if this friend really does come across as authentic and knows they made a mistake and owns up to it and is accountable for it, then a recruiting firm can absolutely help kind of go past that piece.
I don't think he's apologetic about it, but it's a shame because he's really talented. He's very good when you get him in his lane. So here's something that's funny, a story about him. I had this Swedish guy that worked for me who, and the Swedes are not very confrontational. And he was trying to get this fellow, I'm not going to say his name. I'll call him Joe. I'll call him Joe. He was trying to get Joe to change the way he was doing a test. And Hannes, the Swede, is like, "I can't get Joe to change. I can't get him to change." And I said, "Here's what you do. You go over." And I said, "You say these exact words. Don't change a word. You go over there and say, Joe, you're all screwed up. You're doing the test wrong and it has to change." And about an hour later, Hannes came back. He's like, "It worked. It worked." Next thing I know, my phone's ringing and it's Joe. He's like, "What are you doing sending your guys over here telling me I'm all screwed up?" I was like, "Got your attention, didn't it?" And he's like, "Yeah." But he's that kind of guy that he thrives in that type of conflict. Unfortunately, most people don't.
And I think that circles it back to what you were talking about at the very beginning of all of this, is that the leadership aspect is unafraid of having those conversations, even if it's about themselves.
Well, let me tell you another recruiting story because this pulls out something else that's important in your world. So the thing that brought me to Austin, there was a company that had been trying to recruit me for 2 years, and for some reason they quit calling me directly and they put a recruiter on. I was like, guys, if you had called, it was just a timing issue. And I had told them what the issue was before. And so the recruiter, they put a recruiter on. Recruiter gets me down here. I interview, have an offer before I get on the airplane. Go back to work in North Carolina, go talk to one of my buddies. And he said, well, how was Austin? And I thought I'd told him, I was like, oh, it's great. And he said, so are you going to take it? And I was like, what are you talking about, Paul? He's like, well, you got a job offer. And I was like, how do you know that? Another recruiter had called him, not the one that brought me here. Another recruiter called him. Not only told him that I had a job offer, but told, and I asked him, it's like, well, Paul, do you know how much the offer is? He said, yep. I said, tell me. He had it to the penny. He knew the offer to the penny. There were like three people on the earth, maybe, my hiring manager, whoever had to approve that, in HR,
Right.
and my recruiter and myself.
There's some red flags and legalities there.
And I, when I got that, I immediately called my manager. I said, this happened. Any discussions, the recruiter's out of the loop. And everybody tried to tell me that this recruiter would never do that. I'm like, who did?
I think the writing's on the wall with that one. I've certainly been in situations where I have worked with a candidate. Either I made the placement and I knew that this candidate was taking that job, or I was representing another candidate that was going for the same job or same company, and I would get the notice that either my candidate or the other candidate got the job, and then I'd have to have the conversation with the other candidate saying, "Hey, job has been filled. Let's see what else we got for you." But that's par for the course. That's standard. What you described is,
So what is the standard of confidentiality? How's that managed in your world?
So a lot of things we've worked with everything for companies that require NDAs. Obviously, there are some of those classified confidential searches. It's not exactly something you want to go broadcast that you're going to go find the head of HR for X company when head of HR is probably involved in the conference or is seeing the traction. So we have NDAs that we can utilize. Depending on the relationship with the client and the client, if it's a brand new client that we've never worked together before, they're not going to get anything in terms of personally identifiable information off of a candidate from us until we have that contract signed back to us. And that's just a good trust in a good step into the trusting relationship piece of it. That said, we are talking internally. When I say this, I mean all the recruiters, myself, those of us at Rysis, we are all talking to each other. We have account managers all going, here's the process, here's what we know. And we always have the team kind of huddle before offers go out, telling other candidates they're not going, especially if it's kind of that sensitive scenario. I will say it really doesn't happen quite as much as you might think in that case. The biggest thing is we just don't send out information willy-nilly.
I think this was one recruiter that was bragging to one of his competitors.
Well, and that was the question. Was this other recruiter working in the same firm as that recruiter, or it was an entirely different? Oh, different. Okay, that's even worse. Got it. Okay.
I think he was just bragging that he got the kill.
Got it. Because we encountered that in other scenarios in the background where it was an internal team conversation at a previous employer, but never would have told X recruiting firm about that. No. No.
Yeah. So let's wrap up with this. So Rysis, that's an interesting name. What's the origin? Rysis Talent Partners.
So our three founders all come from an HR in the corporate space background that felt they could do, they brought the right approach to the engagement with human and the personal services. And so Rysis is Latin for laughter. So the idea here is that partnering with a firm to find your next team player should not be a painful or dreaded process. You should be able to relate with them and enjoy the process, enjoy working with them. We have an entire document called the RTP Way that highlights exactly what is expected of the internal employee engaging with both the customer and then also with the candidate to ensure everyone has the best process possible. Does it always happen? Of course not, but we're not afraid to have that conversation and learn from that either. So we want it to be something that maybe you don't always look forward to, but you're certainly not dreading it and avoiding it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Well, Kyle, how can people reach you?
So I am on LinkedIn. I did not get black spotted on there. So you can find me there at Kyle. In fact, it's Kyle-T-Schwarz. And that's Schwarz for last name.
No T.
No
Cut
T.
the T.
Yeah.
Cut
The
the T.
T
It's not.
is the middle initial. There's no T in the end of the last name. My contact info is all updated on there. But otherwise, it's very simple. It's KyleSchwarz@RicesTalent.com.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
I appreciate you having me. This was a great conversation. Thanks for the time.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.